the world's great novels. Before the publication of The Moonstone in the middle of the last century, Wilkie Collins had already won fame as one of the ranking novelists of his day. He is best remembered, however, for The Moonstone, which brought him special recognition as a writer who concentrated on a dominant motif, which he developed by the introduction of strange and unexpected elements. The National Broadcasting Company now presents in its series of Books That Live, the fourth and final episode of The Moonstone by Wilkie Collins, one of the world's great novels.
I, Gabriel Betteridge, house steward to Miss Rachel Verinder, I myself witnessed the experiment to determine whether Franklin Blake was indeed the person who had stolen the Moonstone. In one respect, the experiment had been a success, and in another, a complete failure. For under the influence of a drug which had been administered him in the experiment, Franklin Blake had risen from his bed and had taken the piece of crystal, supposed to represent the long-missing diamond Moonstone, from the drawer of the Indian cabinet. All this, mind you, was exactly as Miss Rachel Verinder, its owner, had observed him to do the night a year before when the jewel itself had disappeared. But this time, overcome by the effects of the drug, he had dropped the Moonstone on the floor and collapsed. The first time, however, he had walked from the room and out of Miss Rachel's sight still carrying the Moonstone. Well, being drugged, Mr. Blake had no memory of either act. So what he had done with the gem after leaving Miss Rachel's room on that night a year ago was still a mystery. And it was a harassed, worried Franklin Blake who met soon after with Mr. Brough, the Verinder family lawyer.
Let me say first of all, Mr. Blake, that I'm sorry the experiment turned out no better than it did.
I was willing to try anything to prove to Rachel that I was not consciously to blame for the disappearance of the Moonstone. Well, at least the experiment was successful in that. Rachel and I are soon to be married.
Oh, good.
I am grateful to Ezra Jennings for his experiment, but I cannot rest until the Moonstone is found and all possible suspicion removed from the name.
I might as well tell you what I told Ezra Jennings. I have my own theory in regard to the present whereabouts of the Moonstone.
Oh, you have?
A theory supported by fact, or rather by facts, which cannot be disputed.
Go on, Mr. Brough.
The Moonstone is in possession of the bankers of a notorious moneylender, a man who calls himself Mr. Septimus Luca.
Oh, yes. Sergeant Cuff spoke of him in connection with the suicide of Rosanna Spearman.
He is ostensibly a dealer in gems and objects of art and has long been established in London.
Yes, yes.
However, his most successful dealings have been conducted with thieves, swindlers, and charlatans.
But actually, Mr. Brough, what proof have you that the Moonstone now reposes in Mr. Luca's special bank?
Well, now, first, let me point out that he's been the subject of considerable attention on the part of the three Indians who appeared here a year ago in what was obviously an attempt to seize the Moonstone.
Yes, yes, I heard about that. Luca complained to the police that they had been hanging about his shop and asked protection against them.
Oh, yes, yes, but perhaps you didn't know this. Believing that his professional services were in demand, the worthy Mr. Luca tells me he paid a visit to a strange London address. He was conducted into a handsome apartment by an apparently most respectable gentleman who then withdrew. Then suddenly, Luca was overwhelmed from behind by assailants. Assailants he never even saw, and searched.
But certainly these ruffians, the three Indians or whoever they were, didn't expect to find the Moonstone on Mr. Luca's person.
I hardly think so, but they did take something from him.
What was that?
A receipt.
A receipt?
Yes. One which acknowledged that on that very day, Mr. Luca had deposited with his private bankers a valuable of great price.
But if these men took a receipt for this valuable, Why didn't they go to the bank and claim it?
Oh, because they're too clever, too cunning to expose their hand in such fashion. Oh, no, no, Mr. Blake. These men, and I believe they were the same three Indians, merely wished to ascertain the place where the moonstone is being kept.
What do you think they'll do next?
They'll wait. They'll wait until such time as the illustrious Mr. Luker will have to come to the bank, remove the moonstone, and hand it over to his client.
When will that be?
Well, the moonstone was stolen a little more than a year ago, and now it's a well-established custom that valuables left with private bankers are redeemed before the year has elapsed.
Then any day now, Luca will go to the bank to get the moonstone, and the three Indians will certainly make another attempt to get it from him.
Well, they'll either try to take it from Mr. Luca himself or the person to whom he hands it over. In short, the person who stole the moonstone.
And if we discover this person, I will have been vindicated and my conscience cleared.
Correct, Mr. Blake.
We must act quickly.
Here's what we'll do. We'll have a watch put on Mr. Septimus Luker. Then when he goes to the bank to withdraw the moonstone, we shall be on hand, even though we must reckon with the three Indians themselves.
I tell you, Gabriel, this is the last desperate throw of the dice. And if we don't play the game boldly, skillfully, and with every resource at our command, we will lose. And this time for good.
No, 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 my boy. This is a time for patience. Robinson Crusoe would say...
I'm sorry, Gabriel, but I'm not much interested in what your Mr. Crusoe would have to say on the subject of patience. I'm tired to death of waiting.
There's a great deal you could learn from Robinson Crusoe.
I have an idea I could learn much more from another person. A living person.
Have you anyone particular in mind, Mr. Blake?
Yes, the finest police officer that England ever had, Sergeant Cuff.
Oh, old Sergeant Cuff?
Yes.
But he went into retirement when he left us last year. Now his only concern is his garden of roses.
I know. But I venture he hasn't forgotten the moonstone. I'll wager that he still smarts from his failure to recover it.
But to get him out of a happy retirement, I do... Mr. Blake, where are you going?
To send a telegram to Sergeant Cuff asking that he meet me in London immediately.
You ask a great deal, Mr. Blake. Among my beautiful roses, I find peace and serenity. Whereas before, I only knew lies, deception, and skullduggery.
Then I cannot induce you to re-enter the case, Sergeant Cuff.
What's that you said, Mr. Blake?
Sergeant Cuff, will you help me apprehend the criminal who stole the moonstone?
Yes, Mr. Blake, I will.
Oh, thank you, Sergeant.
It's just occurred to me that I'll enjoy my roses ever so much more when I've finally laid the ghost of the moonstone to rest. I think I'll begin with our money-lending friend, Mr. Septimus Luker.
My, my, Sergeant Cuff, you are most persistent. 'Tis indeed a pity you've retired from active police work.
Mr. Luker, I've emerged from retirement. I'm again a police officer.
Oh, just as you'd begun to cultivate the art of leisure. That is so desirable, you know. For the life of me, I can't understand what would induce you to neglect those beautiful roses in Dorking.
The moonstone, Mr. Luker.
Oh, dear, dear. The moonstone again. Well, I just can't comprehend your interest in such a bauble.
A most valuable bauble, Mr. Luker.
But it would seem to me there are other things just as valuable, to be sure. Don't you think so, Sergeant? Good heavens, man. You have to sit there eyeing me as if I was some reptile or lizard.
Well, now you mention it, Mr. Luker, there is a certain resemblance.
Now you're insulting. You know you're insulting, don't you?
Insulting, Mr. Luker? I'm merely following your advice.
What are you talking about?
About cultivating the art of leisure.
stop whistling that infernal tune. Good gracious, do you intend to sit here all day with your mouth puckered up into a whistle? Stop it, Sergeant, stop it. Please, Sergeant Cuff. Please.
Yes, Mr. Luker.
Ah, I would like you to stop whistling. That is, if you wouldn't really mind.
May I ask a few questions, Mr. Luker?
Well, I'll answer your questions. That is, to the best of my ability.
That's much better, Mr. Luker. Now, I wish to know how you came into possession of the Moonstone.
Well, a certain person. For the time being, I'll call that person X, if that's agreeable to you, sir.
Yes, for the time being.
Well, this is how it began. About a year ago, on the evening of the 23rd of June, X came to me with a diamond such as I had never seen before. First, I was asked, would I buy the diamond?
And your answer?
It was no. Then I was asked, would I undertake to sell it on commission and to pay a sum down on the anticipated result?
X asked for an advance on the sale of the Moonstone.
Yes, that is correct, sir.
And what was your answer to that proposal?
Oh, I gave no answer. Instead, I asked a question of my own. I said to X, how did you come by this jewel?
Yes.
Well, X began a story, a perfectly preposterous story. Oh, that just won't do, I said. I then rang for my servant and instructed him to show my guest to the door.
What happened then?
Oh, well, then X sang a different tune and told me what I believed and still believe to be the true story. It seems that X was in grave financial difficulties, that a large sum of money was needed to make restitution and so prevent exposure.
Yes?
Oh, I could well understand that. Such a situation is not infrequent among my clients.
So I imagine.
Yes. Well, therefore, I agreed to accept the Moonstone in pawn.
And how much did you advance to X?
Well, in all, a sum of £20,000.
So far, so good, Mr. Luker. And now tell me, how did the Moonstone come into the possession of X? Was that information revealed to you?
Yes, Sergeant Cuff, it was. The Moonstone was given to X.
What? Mr. Luker, in all my years of experience as a police officer, I've never heard such an absurd and utterly ridiculous statement.
Nevertheless, sir, I speak the truth.
I warn you once and for all, Mr. Luker, that you're in a perilous position. You were trafficking in stolen goods. Admit it, sir.
Again, I repeat, the Moonstone was given to X.
Mr. Luker, I order you to disclose the identity of this person X. Instantly, sir, do you hear me?
Sergeant Cuff, I would indeed be a great fool if I did not know my rights. I believe that my client X spoke the truth, and I respect the truth. You cannot alter my position. I now challenge your authority to do so. Sergeant Cuff, good day.
It was a completely bewildered Franklin Blake who faced Sergeant Cuff in the office of Mr. Bruff, the lawyer. He collapsed weakly in a chair and said,
Sergeant, this news you bring now is the sheerest fantasy. Do you mean to say this Luker fellow actually told you that the Moonstone was given to this ex-person?
He did, Mr. Blake, and he convinced me that he believes it to be the truth. I think Mr. Bruff here is well acquainted with Septimus Luker. What's your opinion, sir?
I know this much about him. He likes to stand on safe ground, and when he does, the devil himself can't shake him.
There's only one thing left to do, then. Keep up our vigil at the bank. I presume, Mr. Bruff, you have Mr. Luker under the closest observation.
I have, Sergeant.
The man you have watching him, is he dependable?
Sergeant Cuff, young Mr. Gooseberry is the most dependable man I know, and he can outsmart the cleverest fox that ever ran the course.
Mr. Bruff! Mr. Bruff, sir!
Gentlemen, this is my man, Gooseberry.
How'd you do?
Just a boy. Your child.
Oh, what is it, Gooseberry?
Mr. Luker has just left his home in Lambeth in a cab, sir, and two men were with him.
And they're on their way to the bank?
Of that, I'm sure. I talked to the cab driver before they came out of the house.
To the bank, then, gentlemen.
It's a big enough bank, Mr. Brock.
Yes, isn't it?
I hope we don't lose Mr. Luca in the crowd.
Oh, so do I.
Not a sign of the three Indians.
No.
Unless they're lurking in one of the bank vaults.
Sergeant Cuff, sir.
Yes, Gooseberry.
Mr. Luca's still in the bank. Told one of the guards I had a message for the blighter, I did. He said Mr. Luca was still back there in the inner chamber.
Good lad.
I'll nose about a bit more.
Oh, quick as lightning, that boy.
Sergeant Cuff, look over there. That tall, dark sailor.
Yes. Yes, I've been observing him.
Perhaps the three Indians, not daring to venture in the bank, are using him as their spy.
Quite possible, Mr. Brush. But I'm much more interested in that short, stout fellow over there.
Huh?
One in the gray suit.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see the man. He seems quite nervous, too. I'd wager a guinea he's waiting for Mr. Luca to come out. Yes, Gooseberry, what is it?
Mr. Brough, sir, Mr. Luca's on his way out of the inner chamber.
Yes, here he comes.
And with the two plain clothes men, one on each side.
Look, Sergeant, the man in the gray suit is moving toward them.
Here they come.
Good, we'll close in on him. Keep a sharp
eye. Oh, pardon, sir.
Look where you're going, sir. Bumpkin.
Well, I mean to say...
Well, that fool got in my way just as I was...
They're past... leaving the bank.
Yes, and I'm sure I saw Mr. Luca pass something over to the man in the gray suit.
I'm sure I did, too.
Oh, the man in the gray suit is getting away. He's running.
Well, let us through, then. Let us through. Make way, I tell you. I'm an officer of the law.
Stop that man in the gray suit. He's a thief. Stop him. Stop, thief. Stop him.
Well, it looks as though we've lost our friend in the gray suit.
We would have had him, Mr. Blake, if that infernal cart hadn't gotten in our way.
Slow down, driver. There's a little cause for haste now.
Wrong, sir.
And now we'll never find the moonstone or the man who stole it.
Well, it looks to me as though we've finally come to the end, Sergeant Cuff.
No happy end, I'd say.
Sir, won't that your man, Governor?
Where, cabby, where?
Over there. The one in the great suit is going into the chemist shop.
It certainly is. Stop the car.
Whoa, whoa there.
All right, gentlemen, into that chemist shop.
Righto.
Well, right behind you, Sergeant. Now, you lead the way.
All right. You in the gray suit.
Me, sir?
Yes, you. Hand it over and be quick about it.
Hand it over?
Don't play the idiot with us. We want the moonstone and we mean to have it.
What moonstone?
Come, man. We saw Mr. Luca pass you something as you were leaving the bank. Give up the diamond this minute.
But Mr. Luca didn't give me any diamond. He just gave me his card. I asked him for it. Well, here it is.
His card? What's that?
Well, yes. For some time, I've been trying to see him on a very important business matter. I got a chance to see him in the bank today, so I approached him.
I don't believe this, Sergeant. Search him.
Oh, dear. I think I'm going to...
Oh, he's fainted.
Sergeant Cuff, pardon my sending for you so early in the morning. I wanted to thank both you and Mr. Brough here for your efforts yesterday.
Oh, not at all.
Oh, we're only sorry our efforts were unsuccessful. Obviously, the man in the gray suit had been planted to mislead us.
Oh, it couldn't be helped. But the moonstone is still missing. So long as it is, I cannot fully clear my name.
Now, my boy.
I took the moonstone. Rachel saw me take it. And then on the night of the experiment, I was seen to go through the act of stealing it again.
You took it, yes, but you did not steal it.
No, but it's all the same. Though Rachel knows I didn't take it of my own volition, still it isn't found. After yesterday's dismal failure at the bank, I've become wholly discouraged. I'm ready to give up the search. I'm going away for a long time.
Oh, nonsense, my boy. Oh, Gooseberry.
Mr. Brough, I've found our man.
Found him, you say? Found who?
Why, the tall, dark sailor, of course. The one with the big black beard we saw in the bank yesterday. I followed him while the rest of you were chasing after the little fat man in the gray suit. Because I saw Mr. Luca and something to him.
There's something in that small skull of yours, Gooseberry, and it isn't cotton wool. And then?
The sailor hailed the cab, and I held on behind it and let it pull me along. Oh, I had to run dreadfully fast, I did. And then the cab stopped at the tower wharf, and the sailor went in and spoke to the steward of the Rotherham boat.
What did the sailor want?
To go aboard and sleep on his berth overnight as the ship was to take off the next morning.
Ah, go on, Gooseberry.
Well, the steward said he couldn't sleep on that there boat because it was being cleaned. So the sailor stopped at an eating house in the neighborhood for a bite to eat. And while he was inside, I noticed a very strange, peculiar-looking man loitering around outside.
Was this man foreign-looking? Could he have been an Indian, for example?
Why, yes, Mr. Coffey, did look that way.
Well, go on, go on.
The sailor came out of the eating house and then went to the Wheel of Fortune tavern and asked for a room. He was shown upstairs and immediately retired for the night.
And then?
Then the man who looked like an Indian came along and soon he went upstairs.
Did he take a room for the night?
Oh, no, sir. He slipped upstairs and soon there was a most horrible rumpus going on. The landlord collared Mr. Indian, who is now pretending to be drunk, and threw him out on the street.
This was last night, you say?
Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, I believe the case of the Moonstone is about to come to an end. Come along. We leave for the Wheel of Fortune Tavern.
You know, it's most peculiar you should be wanting to speak to the sailor, sir. I've been trying to rouse him all morning. His room is just down the hall a bit.
You say he instructed you to call him at 7 this morning?
Oh, yes, and it's long past that now. Here's the room.
Why, it's locked. From the inside. Fetch a carpenter, landlord. We'll have to break in there. There. All right, gentlemen. We may enter now.
Lord, bless my soul. Look at him, poor sailor, all stretched out there in the bed like he was having a fit. And his eyes all wide and staring. Oh, the poor man.
He's having no fit. He's dead. Send for the police.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What happened? Was he...
Yes, Mr. Blake, it's a murder. Murder by suffocation.
Oh.
I dare say they used a pillow.
They, Sergeant? Whom do you mean?
The three Indians, Mr. Bruff. Who else?
But, sir, if their room was locked, how did they get in?
Look up there.
A trap door in the ceiling. Oh, those clever blighters.
Well, Mr. Blake, do you recognize the sailor?
Recognize him, Sergeant? Why, no.
Come closer. Stand here beside his bedside. Examine his features carefully.
I don't know him.
You should. He's the man to whom you gave the Moonstone.
To whom I gave... Sergeant Cuff, you're mad. I never saw this sailor in my life. I never gave the Moonstone to this sailor.
Mr. Blake, I didn't say you gave the Moonstone to this sailor. I merely said you gave it to this man.
But a moment ago you said I...
Mr. Blake, I refer to your cousin, Mr. Godfrey Ablewhite.
But this sailor is not my cousin. And besides, I never gave the Moonstone to Godfrey Ablewhite.
Oh, yes, you did. The experiment proved you did. Almost, I should say. For had the experiment been carried but one step forward, we would have learned the truth.
What do you mean?
On the night of the experiment, the drug which had been administered was too strong and overcame you too soon.
I don't understand.
On the night the Moonstone disappeared, you went to the Indian cabinet under the influence of the drug and took the Moonstone from the drawer.
That is right, but...
Then you returned to your room still under the effects of the drug. Godfrey Ablewhite, your cousin, had the room next to yours.
Yes, I remember.
And in your delirium, and because you were oppressed by worry over the responsibility of the Moonstone, you must have called to him. He entered your room. You then handed it over to him for safekeeping. A natural enough association of ideas, since your father owned the bank in Frizinghall where you'd originally deposited the diamond. You gave the Moonstone to Mr. Ablewhite.
No.
Now, Mr. Bruff tells me that recent investigation shows Mr. Ablewhite was leading a double life. And in order to secure funds for his indiscretions, he had mismanaged a trust fund. Desperately needing money to stave off exposure, Godfrey Ablewhite took the Moonstone and said nothing.
But Godfrey wouldn't do a thing like that. My own cousin...
And when he realized that no one knew he had the Moonstone, he pawned it to Mr. Septimus Luker.
So Godfrey was X.
Exactly. I'm sure all of this is true. But Luca knows the straight of it, and we'll verify my deductions through reference to him later. Yesterday, your cousin redeemed the Moonstone. The three Indians followed him here to this inn, murdered him, and made off with the Moonstone. As you can see by the empty wooden jewel box that stands by his bed.
Well, yes, but this sailor with the long black beard cannot be my cousin Godfrey Ablewhite.
But he is, Mr. Blake. Shall I strip him of his disguise and his beard and prove it to you? There.
Oh.
Do you believe me now?
It is Godfrey. Cousin Godfrey Ablewhite.
Mr. Luker did verify Sergeant Cuff's deductions in every particular. And now the Moonstone is gone. And with it, its evil curse. The yellow diamond burdening our lives with tragedy will never return again. That I know. For from Mr. Murthwaite, that eminent authority on Oriental customs, we received news of a strange event recently transpiring in the Kathiawa province of India.
I saw thousands of natives prostrating themselves in holy reverence before the shrine of their sacred four-armed god. Suddenly, like the voice of the wind moaning at night, a great cry went up. No expression of sorrow, but rather one of great exaltation. For on the brow of their sacred moon god gleamed once again in all its dazzling brilliance the great yellow diamond, the Moonstone.
Moonstone by Wilkie Collins is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week to the first episode of a three-part treatment of Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson. And remember that your local public library can be a constant source of information and entertainment. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Moonstone was adapted for radio by Robert Saxon. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Arthur Sedgwick was featured as Sergeant Cuff and Charles Mountain as Franklin Blake. Mr. Bruff was played by Donald Gallagher, Gabriel by Sherman Marks, Luker by Jonathan Hole, Gooseberry by Dick York, Mr. Murthwaite by Boris Aplon, the man in the gray suit by Marvin Peisner, and the landlord by Ted Liss. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. Every 3 minutes, someone in this country dies of cancer. This terrible disease strikes one out of every two families. You can help in the fight against cancer. The American Cancer Society needs money to finance research, establish clinics and detection centers where cancer can be diagnosed and treated early. Give generously. You may be protecting someone you love. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.